Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You're listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. I'm going to be traveling for the next couple weeks, so today we have a double feature of classic Desert Oracle Radio for you. Our first episode was produced by Ken Lane on June 28, 2019, and it's titled Praying to the Aliens. Buckle up!
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Tonight you are not going to know what's true and what's false. On the screen behind us, and you can say, well, is that charitable to Bob Lazar? It doesn't matter. Because enough people believe the story, it resonated enough with the culture that now we all know the story. Whether we believe it or not, or whether our beliefs or our conclusions do not fit into believe it or not. Now, through my own personal research and from wasting most of my life reading dubious UFO groups on the internet, news groups, Above Top Secret, Reddit, and all kinds of books, historical books, recent books, books of research, Blue Book. And an interesting thing is UFO sightings of a certain kind, according to John Keel, the great Fortean journalist who wrote the Mothman Prophecies and lots of other weird stuff. Dusk to twilight is the time when you are most likely to have a close encounter. That means seeing some sort of unidentified aerial phenomena within a couple hundred feet of you. Not distant lights in the sky, but something you cannot avoid and cannot escape. Dusk to twilight. And that's coming right up. And if there's anything that a lifetime of being around weird people has taught me, it's that weird things happen when there are a lot of weird people around. That's right. So watch the skies. Look up from the movie every now and then and watch the skies. All this weirdness might conjure up some kind of space devil. Most people who have a lifetime abiding interest in the subject, in the series of subjects, they began this baffling and frustrating pursuit, usually in their formative years. Doesn't mean everybody, but usually in their formative years. When you're forming your beliefs about the world. The culture of your formative years, you cannot escape. Anybody here have Sirius XM radio? Very handy for the desert. Sirius XM figured out a long time ago that no matter what differences people have, when they're old, they're going to want to listen to the music from when they're young. And it was interesting a couple of years ago to watch SiriusXM fade out the 20s and 30s channel. Those subscribers were no longer with us. So the culture you grow up in, even if you think it's dumb, I mean, I know from dumb, I grew up in the Reagan years, in the Nixon years, but that's still what you come out of. The little girl who first saw a brilliant ball of daytime light, a globe that she said was as bright as the sun, but it lowered right down into the brush at the end of the pasture where she was standing. And the entity that she grew to know who would come out of the ball of light and talk to her through her own thoughts and her brain. Well, this little girl grew up in a fully Catholic, rural, Southern European location a century ago. The culture she grew up in left no question about what it meant if a ball of brilliant light came out of the sky and a brilliant being of all white light approached and you could not even make out its features. So she bowed down to it. And even though it kept saying it was the queen of the universe, she decided it meant that it was Mary, the mother of Jesus. You grow up in a world of saints and magic and bleeding statues, angelic visitations, where the main words that are written down that you hear in your formative years are all from a specific theology. You put it all in place. So imagine the world that a nerdy little boy was growing up in the early 1970s. We had Star Trek reruns on the TV every day. We had trippy movies like 2001 about aliens playing for years as midnight movies. And on the TV news at night, the local TV news at night in the early 1970s was like out of a horror movie. And I don't just mean Vietnam and all the bald eagles falling dead out of the sky, cities burning. It was scary because they would have the most terrifying UFO reports on the local news. And in 1973 began a wave, never seen again, a wave of UFO sightings that involved thousands of individual sightings all over the South and the Southeast. From New Orleans and the Gulf to Florida, up into the Carolinas, the mountains, Tennessee suffered weeks and weeks of increasingly insane nightly visitations. From Memphis to Appalachia. Every kind of shape, black triangles, motherships, aliens, things walking around. Police saw them, pilots saw them, baffled families unloading groceries, And we finished off this nutty wave in 1973 in Pascagoula, Mississippi. These two good old boys went fishing where they always went fishing, outside the well-guarded, well-lit gates of the shipyard that made Navy ships. And right there, some kind of brilliant ship appears, descends, hovers a few feet off the ground. Allegedly, as Jeremy always says. And then the two dumbest aliens anyone has ever seen come bumbling out of this thing, these giant fur-covered one-eyed robots. You wonder who's designing the characters for this stuff. If you grew up in that environment, and you were interested in things like popular science and popular mechanics, putting a jet engine on the back of your car, that kind of stuff, you grew up in the nerdy Southern California engineer dad world. And a lot of people think Skunk Works is only in the desert, in the Antelope Valley. The main part is in Burbank, in the San Fernando Valley. When Fry's, the big computer store there, opened 20 years ago, the motif, the outdoor decor on the facade is a spaceship crashing in with comical little gray Hollywood aliens coming out. We're seeped in the stuff. We see a light in the sky, and before we can figure out if it's a helicopter or a planet that would be there all the time that we'd know about if we put down our phones, we immediately say space aliens. Why? It's our culture. That's right, Sparky. The dogs always start barking before it starts happening. Well, in the late 19th century, an astronomer, appropriate for an astronomy arts theater to be talking about astronomy for a minute before we start talking about space aliens again. This Italian astronomer, in one of the early good telescopes, but not that good, thought he saw what looked like up and down straight canals all over the surface of Mars. It was a big news sensation. Newspapers were very big in the Victorian era. Are there Martians? What are they like? Did they die out? Is there any way we could visit them or they visit us? H.G. Wells was a big fan of the story of the Martian canals. The Martian canals were an artifact of the lens. But it persisted, the idea that there were canals on Mars. It persisted even after we sent robots to Mars. Google has now mapped Mars. You can look at Google Maps Mars. And yet there are people who still believe that there are canals on Mars. With the Martian story established, suddenly all the weird things that happened to people underwent a 60-year process of turning into space aliens. We have all kinds of evidence for UFOs. We have evidence of mass sightings. Sightings like the Phoenix Lights that even the governor saw before he went to prison for unrelated reasons. And then with his political career done, he's a Republican, but Bill Clinton pardoned him. Bill Clinton pardoned him because he saved Bill Clinton's life when they were swimming together. When they were kids at a summer camp together. They're the aliens. Hudson Valley, New York. Thousands and thousands of people saw the Hudson Valley Boomerang. A ship that, if it passed over us here, one wing would be behind that mountain, and one wing would be way behind this movie screen. Despite all these sightings, despite pilots, despite the U.S. Navy last week announcing that they have a new UFO reporting system, because their pilots are being bedeviled by things they don't understand, just like always, ever since we've been flying. Started with the Foo Fighters, Balls of Light. Despite Blue Book, despite the British Ministry of Defense's Black Triangle Report, which is very good. Despite many countries, France, Belgium, the UK, Canada, making their UFO study files public, because there's a lot of curiosity about it. We don't have a shred of evidence or even a good hypothesis that any of this stuff has anything to do with intelligent life flying here in spaceships from other planets. It might be. But we all automatically think this now, not because it might be, but because that's how we explain that stuff now. Now you can go look on basic cable and they'll tell you the aliens have always been coming. You can look in the Pentagon today where some of the brass who follow their Christian religion closely are made very nervous about funding these types of studies because their belief is that the things are demons sent by the devil. Well, one man's demon is another woman's ET. The movie you're going to see tonight is about a story that took all the elements of ufology that started in 1979 with the publication of a book about Roswell. The Roswell story we all grew up with since 1979 was not a known story before that. It was never on In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. So these UFO researchers dredge up this event, and all of a sudden it's an industry. There's one best-selling hardback Roswell book after another. And then something called the Majestic 12 documents are dropped on a Roswell researcher. A canister of film, photocopies of supposed government documents showing that there was a presidential level UFO working study group that fully stage managed over many, many decades the repeated crashes of the world's worst space pilots. And somehow nobody ever found out. Roswell and MJ-12 tells a story of crash-flying saucers from the 1940s and 50s, when the papers supposedly were written, records of meetings between people in the Eisenhower administration and the Truman administration before that. Alien bodies came from later reworkings of the Roswell myth. And that the government was lying about everything all the time was proven by the Pentagon Papers and Watergate. And are these elements, combined with the immense desert military-industrial state that includes Groom Lake, Area 51, Nellis, the nuclear test site, Edwards, the supersonic corridor, China Lake, 29 Palms, Fort Irwin, Goldstone, the NASA antenna complex that keeps track of all of our spaceships on the various planets like Mars. That's all there. The story you're going to see now is from there, too. This is a story about the desert. Thank you all for coming. I hope you enjoy the movie. I hope when you're done with the movie that you wonder about it. You wonder about what you thought about the story beforehand, what you think about it now. There's some truth in the story. What nobody can figure out is what that truth actually is. But it seems kind of important. Now I'm going to introduce you to my friend and comrade, my brother in weird studies, the documentary maker from Extraordinary Beliefs, Mr. Jeremy Corbell. Now watch this mic, it's kind of hot. You're in for a treat. Jeremy's going to say a little something. And then after the movie, we're going to do a Q&A with you. So have your questions ready.
Hey, guys. Thanks for coming out tonight. It's a beautiful night, yeah? I can't think of a better place to screen this film. You know, this all started in the desert. And we definitely have the desert represented here tonight. This movie was a passion of mine since I was a young kid, 13 years old. I heard the story, like maybe many of you, about Bob Lazar. Have you heard the story of Bob Lazar before? Right. So if you haven't, you're going to hear it tonight. And what's unique is after 30 years of coming out and telling this story through George Knapp, the investigative reporter at Las Vegas, Nevada, who broke this story. Yeah, George is awesome. He's my mentor in journalism, and this was his story. This is his story with Bob Lazar. And we now have an opportunity to view Bob's account. Whether you believe it or not, we get to view it through a completely different lens 30 years later now. I'm really excited Bob decided, you know, agreed to talk with me about this because he was relatively silent for 30 years. He got beat up. He got beat up by the UFO community, by the scientific community. But after 30 years, he decided it was important to tell his story again, and he let me do it through a form of documentary so we can reach millions of people with it. And now, through the lens of 30 years, we now know that our government has admitted to maintaining UFO programs on your behalf. That was admitted in 2017 in the New York Times, ATIP, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. Additionally, just 2 days ago, the Navy said that they're putting another method in place to take in Navy and government accounts of pilots who engage these craft of unknown origin. So it's a unique time in human history that we're getting a little bit of the truth from those who were suppressing the truth before. So it gives us a different way to look at what Bob Lazar said and what he says today. If what Bob Lazar is telling you is true, it is an absolute game changer to the way we view ourselves in this universe. So, enjoy the movie. It will entertain you. Mickey Rourke narrates it, which is desert cool. Yeah. And afterwards, there will be a Q&A. It's a great opportunity. There's a lot to think about with this movie, and I'll try to answer your questions if I know them. It was quite a journey making this film. So again, thanks for being here to watch the movie. And, you know, thanks to Ken Lane. Who can do a UFO sermon like Ken Lane? Nobody but Ken Lane. After the Q&A, you're going to also have a live performance from a dear friend of mine. She runs and owns La Copine. If you ain't done nothing right in your life till you've gone to La Copine for food. It's amazing. Claire, she'll be here to sing a few songs, one of my favorites. And most importantly, I want to thank Red, Blue, Black, Silver, who, the only reason we're here is because of him. He said, we're doing this. We're doing this in the desert, man. So, thank you for putting this on. Yeah. And one last thing before the movie starts, we might have to adjust the screen a little bit. I'm not sure, because we have to center it. But if you haven't seen or haven't heard of The Miracle of Pioneer Town, you got to drive up Pioneer Town Road at night, and you will see a USO, Unidentified Standing Illuminated Object. Check it out. Grinch hunting is real. Okay, movie will start in a second here.
A UFO sermon, as it was billed, really an introduction to a screening of Bob Lazar's Area 51 and Flying Saucers at the Joshua Tree Astronomy Arts Theater a couple of months ago. Take a look at our website, desertoracle.com, and on our radio page, you'll see some pictures of this sermon taken by Natalie Ball. I think it's Ball and not Baal, like the former Lord God of Canaan. And there are some things in one of these pictures, wonders seen in the sky, that are not in the other pictures. What do you think they are? From Amboy to Zizix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio, and I am your host, Ken Lane. We broadcast from KCDZ-FM in Joshua Tree and are distributed by Public Radio Exchange. And that Bob Lazar movie is out on Netflix now, so take a look if you haven't seen it. Get our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Try Spotify or iTunes or Art19. Thank you for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Yes, that was strange, but isn't that why we're here? Anyway, we're at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM. 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Our second episode today is titled Those Mysterious Green Fireballs. Released June 19th, 2020, it will have you watching the night skies for more than stars and jets. Enjoy!
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and the nighttime is when you might be lucky enough to see one of the strangest sights in the sky. Maybe you've already seen one, maybe you've seen a couple. Maybe, like me, you've seen them and did not add the experience to your list of strange and unusual experiences. Because somewhere along the way, you got the idea that these fantastic things had been explained. That we already knew all about them. Nothing to see here, just part of nature's rich bounty. Do you keep a list of your strange and unusual experiences? It's something I started doing about 10 years ago, and I'll tell you why. Because the kind of stuff you see that doesn't fit in, you tend to forget it. Now, how could we forget the most baffling moments of our lives, the most extraordinary events? Not just weird things in the sky, but the shocking moments of deja vu, the psychic communications. Like when you're dropping some stuff off at the thrift store, and you notice a photograph at the bottom of the box, and it's an old friend you haven't thought about or heard from in 25 years. And as you pluck the snapshot from the old box of now vintage clothes, your phone rings. It's the person in the picture. How do they even have your cell phone number? Well, I was just thinking about you, the long-lost friend will say. And just then, our old mutual friend texted me out of the blue, and she had your number. What a coincidence. What a coincidence. Your mind is a radio. A mystery radio. We don't know how it works. Russia and the United States threw piles of money at psychic research during the Cold War. They knew it was real, they just could not figure out how to turn it into a weapon. Thank God. Bob Dylan just put out a new record of new songs, and he told the newspaper of record that the songs were written in a trance. Matter of fact, the way you might tell somebody it's Friday. Patti Smith says she's in a trance whenever she performs. And studies using MRIs have shown that accomplished jazz musicians go into a trance when playing at their best. Parts of the brain go quiet as inspiration and muscle memory flow. John Coltrane seemed to let his soul transmit right through the saxophone to the people in the room or across the radio waves. Or over space and time in the grooves of his classic records. And John Coltrane was obsessed with space and time, it turns out. As you know, if you ever sat down with Interstellar Space, his 1967 album, the year he himself returned to space, left his earthly body behind. Get on the rug with your head between the speakers and give that a good listen some late night, maybe later tonight. What Marcel Proust figured out 100 years ago is that memories are a time machine. That a rich memory connects you directly to the past. Sight, smell,
taste, touch. What will set it off? For me, sometimes it's a certain kind of dappled sunlight, especially through green leaves, that brings back specific lazy summer afternoons on a slow train to Bratislava. A bottle of Moravian wine open on the fold-down table in the compartment. Music playing through little Walkman speakers. Or falling asleep for a nap as a little child in East Texas. The vibration of the leaves in the breeze, the layers of scattered sunlight, a kaleidoscope in shades of yellow and green. And you may think, well, good luck with that in the desert, but we got trees in the desert too. The desert willows, which look tired and dead until June, when suddenly they're covered in long green leaves and beautiful, fragrant blossoms. Each one like a little corsage. White and pink with splashes of yellow, and the bees buzzing happily around, and the hummingbirds darting around for another drink. And we got cottonwoods with their curtains of green leaves, too, all over the Southwest, wherever there's a little water. Los Alamos, Fremont's cottonwood. Los Alamos is where something strange began to occur in 1947 and 1948. At least that's when it came to the attention of those scientists who study atmospheric phenomena. Meteors in particular. Because a new kind of sight in the sky began appearing around Los Alamos National Laboratory, and around White Sands, and around the Trinity site. For all the hours consumed by the study of strange aerial phenomena over the desert Southwest, this is one I missed. Probably because, like a dummy, I'd seen some astronomer on PBS or Twitter dismiss the phenomenon. One of those astronomer personalities, you know what I mean? The one with Twitter handles like Astro Karen or whatever, the sort of Bob the Science Guy types. Like, why listen to those people? Their job is to crush wonder, to take the wind out of your sails, to try to make you think everything's figured out and settled and you're just here to watch. Well, it's not settled. Especially in the relatively new sciences regarding things going in and out of space. Things that pass by, things that enter our earthly atmosphere. Great balls of fire, like Jerry Lee Lewis sang. You'll hear one of these public relations professionals pop into a discussion with something like, oh, that's just a sprite, you're all idiots, etc. And then you look up sprites, and the first thing you read is that upper atmospheric sprites are nearly impossible to photograph, completely elusive, and mostly a total mystery. Sprite means air spirit. Atmospheric scientists call another rare variety elves. Real science is much more aware of the deep strangeness of our reality than the cut-and-dried I stand for science sloganeering. What does that even mean? I stand for science. 100 years ago, science was telling us that the intermixing of human races would lead to humanity's downfall. Thousands of scientists were employed by the government of Nazi Germany, and we brought quite a few of those Nazis to America to build our space program. Scientists work for Monsanto, developing new poisons to destroy our global populations of insects, bees in particular. They make new poisons to kill our coyotes, our populations of prairie dogs and pocket gophers. Poisons that go right to the owls and the hawks, so watch out next time you want to signify with your I Believe in Science sign at the brunch protest. Figure out what kind of science you're standing for, is what I'm saying. Because most scientists today work for giant corporations making garbage to sell to other corporations and to the masses. I'm guilty of standing for science, too. I think of biologists, and I think of my friends and my heroes who study wildlife, who collect the information necessary to protect the species. And I rarely stop to think about the many, many more scientists who work in labs testing lipstick and eyeliner and sex toys on rabbits in cages under fluorescent lights. The only thing most scientists have in common today is a lot of student loan debt. Like any character in this role-playing game we're all stuck within, they range from chaotic evil to lawful good. And remember that many of our laws are written with evil intent, too, and that's why lawful does not mean good. Anyway, a red Sprite is conclusively blamed for one aircraft incident. The aircraft, in this case, being a weather balloon carrying a lot of scientific instruments. This was in 1989, the same year that a Sprite was photographed for the first time. The NASA stratospheric balloon launched on June 6th of that year from Palestine, Texas. Something caused the weather balloon to dump all its expensive monitoring equipment miles above the Earth. That's something the scientists eventually concluded was a rare and mysterious red Sprite, which at that point had not even been given its air spirit name. And while they've been the subject of intensive investigations, the first image of a Sprite dates back just 3 decades. A handful have been captured in photos or videos since. One from the International Space Station and one taken from San Francisco on February 1 of 2003, although none of us have seen that last photograph. The 2003 crash of the Space Shuttle Columbia, the wreckage of which, coincidentally, came down over Palestine, Texas, began over San Francisco as the shuttle began its descent from orbit, on track for a Florida runway landing a continent away. An amateur photographer in San Francisco caught several images of the shuttle as it raced by. Here's how the San Francisco Chronicle reporter described what she saw in the most incredible photo. Quote, a glowing purple rope of light that corkscrews down toward the plasma trail and cut sharply toward the shuttle from behind. Well, a former astronaut was dispatched to the amateur photographer's home, where the newspaper reporter was there to hear this astronaut's response to seeing the image. Wow. Along with the camera, the image was immediately flown by NASA T-38 jet to Houston for investigation. The photo has never been released to the public, never published. Which would make 2 NASA craft, apparent victims of the mysterious red Sprite, the unmanned NASA stratospheric balloon launched from Palestine, Texas in 1989, and the NASA shuttle Columbia with its crew of 7, which disintegrated over Palestine, Texas in 2003. Among the astronauts lost was Israeli pilot and scientist Ilan Ramon, whose onboard work included the last fully funded space research on upper atmospheric sprites. While most of the space shuttle disintegrated, thousands of tiny pieces of burnt remnants of Columbia were collected. In the area around Palestine, Texas, it took years to try to figure out what was what. And those scant bits were put in place on the floor of a NASA warehouse. Like a jigsaw puzzle with 62% of the pieces missing. A ghost ship. And those scraps that were recovered were mostly scorched beyond recognition. Except for one curious item that survived being burnt up and torn apart at 18 times the speed of sound, nearly 4 miles per second. That item was Ilan Ramon's diary. Ink and pencil, handwriting in Hebrew within a paper booklet. It survived the crash nearly intact. 37 pages discovered on the Texas ground. 2 pages from the diary were exhibited last year at the Israel Museum in West Jerusalem. One of the curators described it like this. The diary survived extreme heat in the explosion, extreme atmospheric cold, and then was attacked by microorganisms and insects. It's almost a miracle that it survived. It's incredible. He added that there is no rational explanation for how it was recovered when most of the shuttle was not. The pages were displayed alongside fragments of the Dead Sea Scrolls, discovered in 1947. Curator Haggit Maoz explained the significance. It did not burn, but came back to Earth. This exhibition deals with the extraordinary. These manuscripts were not supposed to have survived. End quote. The Dead Sea Scroll portion tells the story of Enoch, one of the great old ones, the ancestors of Noah. Enoch was taken up. He ascended to heaven. Anyway, if you want to know the science that goes with red sprites, you're going to find a lot of question marks, blanks, assumptions, mysteries. Now, back in New Mexico at Los Alamos National Laboratory in 1999, researchers published an account of a meteor that apparently triggered a sprite. This was published in the Journal of Geophysical Research, says the introduction. It was a singular observation that had us all scratching our heads. There's a lot we don't know about meteors, too. And sprites, and whatever mix of oddities shot down the NASA weather balloon, leaving its scorched payload on the lawn of a Dallas homeowner. And one thing we don't know at all is whether the mysterious green fireballs of the Southwest are an incredibly strange kind of otherwise natural meteor, as Pamela the Science Pal will try to tell you, or something that is not natural at all, as astronomer Lincoln LaPaz, director of the Institute of Meteoritics in New Mexico, eventually came to believe. About the multitudes of eccentric green fireballs witnessed over Los Alamos in the late 1940s and early 1950s, and persisting to this day. An article in Time magazine, November 19 of 1951, headline, Great Balls of Fire, deals with this subject and its chief scientist. Quote, the U.S. Southwest, land of rockets, atom bombs, and flying saucers, had another sensation last week. Green fireballs streaking across the sky, behaving like nothing ever seen by Earthlings before. In 13 days, 8 brilliant objects dazzled Southwesterners. According to Dr. Lincoln LaPaz, head of the Institute of Meteoritics at the University of New Mexico, a fall of 9 bright meteorites in a year over a comparable area would be considered exceptional. I just don't know what to make of it, said Dr. LaPaz. I am almost inclined to ask those fellows out in Nevada what they're doing. Dr. LaPaz pointed out that meteors big enough to penetrate the lower atmosphere do not occur in showers. The so-called meteor showers are caused by very small particles that burn out quickly far above the Earth. The green color is unusual too. Meteorites generally roar like jet planes as they approach the Earth. But most observers insisted that these odd green objects were completely silent. Though some of them seem to hit the surface with a flash, brilliant even in daylight, search parties so far have found no remains of the mysterious fireballs, but the Southwest was already abuzz with rumors. The fireballs were being pinned on White Sands, the rocket proving ground in southern New Mexico, as well as on the Nevada bomb testers. So far, no one has yet suggested another invasion of the famed flying saucers with their bright little crewmen from Venus or Mars. But people were beginning to report things in the sky as far away as New Jersey and New York. These are deeply weird things. LaPaz became convinced the green fireballs were not natural phenomena. The suggestion that test pilots in Nevada were to blame, well, that was a joke. Same with the bomb scientist. A year later, he was serious when he suggested that the Soviet Union had perhaps created some kind of artificial meteor that was scanning and patrolling the installations in New Mexico. Well, that turned out to be false, too. And the Condon Committee paid special attention to the mystery green fireballs during their congressionally funded study of UFOs at the University of Colorado from 1966 to 1968. Many of the scientists insisted the fireballs could not be explained as random natural phenomenon. But the government already had the conclusion it wanted, and the scientists were paid to stick to that conclusion. I've seen two myself. Compared to thousands of meteors I've seen, which are all fantastic, but had little in common with the green fireballs beyond being seen in the sky. Both of my sightings were in Palm Springs. Once right there at Tockwoods Canyon and Indian Canyon on the way to Christmas Eve dinner at Johnny Costa's, and good for you if you remember that Tockwoods, the great monster, often appears in his namesake canyon as a green fireball. The next, late in 2019, I'm headed into town from the 10. Again on Indian Canyon, there was a bright piercing light seemingly right over the north runway of the airport. And then from the north was the longest, slowest, lowest green fireball you can imagine, headed right for the white light, which dissipated. My windows were open. There was no sound from the monster fireball, which you could have fit a dozen jetliners within. I tried to follow it, but lost sight. The sky returned to normal. Well, this was all brought to mind by viral video of a huge green fireball, much like the one I witnessed in Palm Springs last year, going slow and low over a workyard in the Australian outback, an industrial mining operation. You hear the baffled employees saying, "No, really, what is that?" to a chorus of Aussies saying, aliens? Well, for once, the news article did not claim scientists had explained away the green fireballs. In fact, the expert in this article added a bizarre new fact. In at least one confirmed observation, a green fireball entered the atmosphere, flew low over 1,300 kilometers of Australia, and then went back to space. I'll link it on our website. Read it yourself if you doubt me. From Amboy to Zyzix and across a great Mojave wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio. I'm your host, Ken Lane. We got some hot tracks from our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver on this program. Our theme song is by Pierre Langer. We broadcast from Joshua Tree Friday nights locally from KCDZ 107.7 FM. Hey, let me mention this real quick. It looks like we will be doing something special for our 100th episode, Friday night, July 17th. An outdoor live broadcast and performance in Pioneer Town brought to you by our beloved Honky Tonk on Main Street. I think they're calling it Porch Fest, right there in the cabin behind Pappy's. We're working out the details. We're going to do it safe and sane. We'll keep you informed. Hey, we got a Patreon, too. It's how we do this, how we keep the lights on. Go to patreon.com/Desert Oracle or to our website, desertoracle.com. We sure do appreciate the support. You can get our podcast through all the usual outlets, iTunes and Stitcher and Podbay and Spotify, Pandora, and on fine community radio stations up and down the West Coast. We'll talk to you again for show number 97 next week. Thank you for listening, friends. Interesting times. Good night from the voice of the desert.
My deep thanks to Ken Lane for his work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. Please call and leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Next week, we're going to have another double feature episode, and be safe this 4th of July. Till next week, stay well and sweet dreams.